Our lesson today is taken out of the 22nd and the 23rd chapter of the book of the Acts. Last week I concluded with where Paul was standing on the stairs and he beckoned with his hand that he may speak unto the multitude of Jews who had taken him prisoner and who had forced him also to go up the stairs bodily almost on the shoulders of the soldiers, and where he asked the captain of the soldiers to give him permission to speak, we find him in the beginning of this chapter saying unto the Jews that were before him, "Men, brethren, and fathers, hear me while I make my defense before thee." He commences to speak unto them that he verily was a Jew who had been born in Tarsus, the country of Cilicia, and that he had been brought up in this very city in Jerusalem at the feet of Gamaliel, and that he had been taught according to the strictest rule of their religion. This Paul, standing on the stairs, calls himself a Jew. This name, Jew, originated from the patriarch Judah. As you all know, the Jews, after the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, were dispersed throughout all the world. The Jew is a wonder among the nations. A Jew, he at this present time has a country again. But for thousands of years, they had no country. They were dispersed throughout all the nations of the earth. Most of the Jews are brokers and traders. They do not believe in cultivating the ground and being an agriculturist. We see these Jews round about us. How little do we think of the glorious history that is attached to these people. Their history dates back thousands and thousands of years. And when we view these people, we may see on them the same image, the same impress that was upon every Jew that came forth in this world. They have lost all expectation of being a great empire and ruling in this world. The Jew, his literature exceeds all the literature of every nation in the world. To this day, mankind worships and praises God in and through the medium of the Psalms of David. Mankind likewise bows before the teaching of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, who was also a son of Abraham. The Jew, he is a wonderful person. When we view the Jewish race, we may behold in them that God still preserves them, and that God still has many promises for these people, which most certainly shall be fulfilled in their due time. Paul, he calls himself a Jew. He was born in the city of Tarsus. This city lay in the country of Cilicia, a country in the south of Asia Minor, on the eastern border of the Mediterranean Sea. Their capital was Tarsus. This was the birthplace of Paul and of many eminent men. This city grew in eminence above even Athens, Antioch, and Alexandria, in wealth, in grandeur. This city was noted for its instruction and education. This city Tarsus is at this present time about one quarter of the size that it was when Paul was born in it. It has lost much of its importance and of its magnitude due to these political reasons in these countries that continually they are rising up and they are fighting against other countries which destroy their most important cities. This city then Paul came from, and he here states before these people that he was brought up at the feet of Gamaliel. This Gamaliel, he was a rabbi, and he was a lawyer, and he was very zealous for the Jewish religion in Jerusalem. And almost every Jew knew this person, Gamaliel. Paul directs this council, these people that are listening to him, to this man. For truth, he had been taught by this man the strictest sect of his religion. And likewise, he begins to speak how that he also was zealous before God as they were to this very day. And he points to the high priest to whom he had went for letters to go to Damascus as confirming that he was filled with zeal as they were in persecuting the Christians, the saints, the followers of Jesus Christ. They likewise were zealous, he said, and they had revealed their zeal in persecuting him, in taking him and beating him, and if possible, they would have killed him. He likewise had been just like they were. He wasn't any different. He had persecuted the Christians too. He had hailed them out of houses and brought them into prison and had killed many of them. And in through the hatred and the anger that he carried in his bosom against them. So he was just like these people in this respect. And for proof of this, he pointed to the high priest and to those to whom he had went for letters to take those that were followers of Jesus Christ from Damascus back to Jerusalem to put them into prison and to punish them. But now he begins to relate what happened to him when he was on his way to Damascus. On his way to Damascus, he said, when he drew nigh to the city at noontime, a great light shined round about him. And they all fell to the ground. Paul fell with those that were with him. They all seen the light. And as he was laying on the ground, he heard a voice speaking unto him, saying, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And I answered him and said, Lord, who art thou? And he said unto me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom thou persecutest. Here Paul relates what took place with him on his way. Such a person who had caused so much trouble and had brought so many people into prison, he was cast down to the ground by this wonderful light that shined round about him. And he heard a voice speaking to him. This person that spoke to him knew his name, knew his plans, knew his life, knew what he was doing. The others only saw the light, but they did not hear the voice, he said. And as he heard this voice speaking unto him, he said, What must I do, Lord? And the Lord said to him that he should arise and go into the city of Damascus, and it would be told him what he should do. He's speaking to these people. He's saying unto them, Look now, I was going to Damascus to bring back men and women as prisoners to Jerusalem. But here, I am laying on the ground. I have been cast down by this person who I hated, who I despised, who I followed, and whose followers I punished. He brought me down into the dust. And as I lay there, he told me that I should arise and go to the city of Damascus. And as I arose, I was blind. I could not see. The others weren't blinded. It was just Paul that was blinded. And those that were with him, and they had to take him by the hand and lead him into the city of Damascus. He had expected to take men and women back prisoner and lead them to Jerusalem, but now he, prisoner of Jesus Christ, he was led by the hand into the city of Damascus, blind. He was a babe in the power of Jesus Christ, unable to do anything but obey this person who had stopped him on the way to Damascus. And when he came into the city of Damascus, he was blind. And there came unto him a man by the name of Ananias, he said, a devout man, well reported of all the Jews in the city of Damascus. And he came and he stood before me and he said unto me, Brother Saul, receive thy sight. And immediately, he says, I looked upon him who had spoken unto him, Ananias. And Ananias spake unto him and said that it was God that had chosen him, and God also had given unto him to know his will, and to hear, and to see the voice of this just one. And Ananias, he was the minister of God unto this man, Paul, that he again received his sight, and that he was told that he was chosen of God, and that he would have to do the will of God, and that it was because God had chosen him that he had seen this just one. Paul here is giving an account of his conversion unto these people, the Jewish people. They all had listened very silently. It was a wonderful experience that they were listening to. They probably had never heard anything like that before. And Paul, he was speaking to these people to convince them that God of heaven and earth had called him and had given him this employment. And that was his defense. Now this man, Ananias, he was a wonderful minister to Paul. It was instrumentality by this man that Paul was given again his sight, and that he was given to know the will of God concerning him. I was thinking about this, and I thought, there may be some of my hearers who likewise in this life have had a wonderful light shine down into their souls. And when this light came, they likewise fell to the ground. That's where it brought Paul. And we read in his account in Acts 9 how that he cried out unto the Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? There may be some amongst my hearers who have been also brought on their knees in secret crying, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? What must I do to be saved? Has anyone ever had that? Paul, he had Ananias come to him to make known unto him what God had in store for him. It may be that you likewise, under these exercises, have come to the house of God, and the minister was a minister of God unto you. As you listen to the explanation of the truth, he commenced to speak and to teach that God had a chosen people, and you were so concerned to know whether you were one of them or not. For all hinged upon that point, whether you were a chosen vessel of mercy. And as the minister began to describe the exercises of such a person, the Spirit of God accompanied the word into your heart. And the more that you listened, the more that faith was wrought in your soul to believe that those things were going on within you. And the more that you began to search and look into the matter, in reading homeward, in books, in the Bible, the more that the Spirit convinced you that you were a subject of this work of grace. And oh, what a blessed time this was for you who have experienced this. How few. I wonder how many I'm speaking to. Oh, how few my hearers know of something that I am trying to describe. All that wonderful time when everything became new. The world was new. The Bible was new. The ministry was new. You seemed to have new ears. You seemed to have new eyes. You seemed to have new heart. You had new feelings. You had new desires. You had breathings after God. Oh, what a wonderful time. And you could believe. Oh, that was the most important thing. You could believe that God had looked down in mercy and pity and in compassion upon you. And all my hearers, you walked with God. You talked with God. He was your friend. You seen him in the smallest thing. All this time when God began this work in your heart was a wonderful time for you. Everything you did had feeling and life in it. You prayed, you read, you came to the house of God. Everything was feeling and life. Wasn't it so? You remember that time? A never to be forgotten time. There may be one amongst my hearers that say, oh, I wish I were as in the former days. Oh, I wish that I knew where I might find him. My hearers, this wonderful time seems to have been to you as a dream. It's all gone by. You wonder whether it was true or not. Now you learn to know yourself as one of the chiefest, as one of the greatest, as one of the vilest and the blackest of sinners. And everything that you used to do with feeling, with life, it's all gone. What do you think now? You think it's all wrong. You think it never was true. You can't believe that it ever took place in your life. It seems so far gone. You know something there of my hearers? I hope I'm not just talking to a multitude of people that don't understand me. Oh, this, what Paul experienced in a wonderful manner, each and every sinner chosen by God experiences. And now my hearers, this man Paul, he goes on to say that he went up to Jerusalem. And when he was in Jerusalem in the temple, he was in a trance. and he saw the Lord Jesus. And Jesus spake unto him and said, Make thee haste and get thee out of this city, for they will not believe thy testimony concerning me. This, my hearers, is something that isn't too clear when Paul went up to Jerusalem. In Galatians 1, verse 18, he says himself that it was 3 years later that he came to Jerusalem. It wasn't just immediately after his conversion then, but it was 3 years later that he was in the temple and he was praying and he went into a trance. And there he seen Jesus again. Not as he seen him in his conversion, for then he seen him with his bodily eyes, but now he seen him in his mind, speaking unto him. Have you ever come into the temple? Have you ever been led in prayer, and as you were in prayer, you forgot everything? All the Lord was said before you, you seen something of this precious Jesus. And oh, you could explain your case so clearly and so plainly unto him. Oh, my hearers, it's such a wonderful thing when we come to the house of God and we may meet this precious Jesus. And now Jesus spoke unto Paul and told him to get out of the city in haste. But Paul, he commenced to reason with the Lord Jesus Christ. And he said unto Jesus, Thou knowest, Lord, that I persecuted and punished these people, and they know this too here in Jerusalem, what I was and what I did. And how that even when the martyr Stephen was slain, I held the clothes of them that slew him. In this, he would like to remain in Jerusalem. He would have liked to prove to those Jews who Jesus was, that he was the true Messiah, and that he would bring himself before these people and explain what had happened to him could also happen to them. But Jesus commissioned him to go out of the city, and he would send him far hence unto the Gentiles. Now, my hearers, there's another point here. And that point is this. Paul, he's relating unto these people his conversion. In the next chapter, Jesus himself says unto Paul, As ye have witnessed for me in Jerusalem, so must ye also witness in Rome. Telling his conversion was a witnessing for Jesus Christ. We sincerely believe that when he went through Asia and through all those countries preaching Christ, he often brought before them his conversion as a means whereby God would give that sinners likewise would be converted. And this was then a witness for Jesus Christ. And now this man, Paul, when he came to that point that Jesus Christ had commissioned him to go to the Gentiles, these Jews that had been listening to him, they couldn't bear it any longer. Gentiles, that was a word that they hated, that they despised. And they began to cry out and shout and take their clothes off their bodies and throw dust into the air. Such a commotion they made when he mentioned that Christ had sent him to the Gentiles. And now the captain of these soldiers. He feared that they would take Paul and tear him apart. So he commanded Paul to be brought into the castle. And he was carried into the castle, and the door was shut. And the Jews, they had to disperse. They couldn't get a hold of Paul because this captain took care of him. But now this captain seems to have been a person that didn't understand the Hebrew language, because Paul had been speaking in Hebrew to these people. And he commands his soldiers to take Paul and to scourge him. He thought Paul was concealing something. He thought Paul was guilty of something, and he wanted to know what he was guilty of. So he commanded his soldiers to scourge him, to examine him that way, to find out what he had done wrong. For the Jews, they cried so out against him. If he had been left with the Jews, he probably would have been killed. And now, they're going to scourge him. For these Jews had cried, "Away with this fellow from the earth." This is what they said, and this is what they thought of the conversion that he had explained to them. This is the treatment that he got. And now they were going to scourge him. Scourging, that was a Jewish and a Roman custom. They were not allowed to lay any more than 40 lashes upon a person that was to be scourged. They used sort of a whip, I would call it, which had 3 lashes on it. Some were made out of leather, some were made out of rope, some were made out of twigs. And they would strip the person from his shoulders down to his middle, and they would bend him over and fasten him to a post so that the person that was going to scourge him would be able to do a good job. And they would strike this person 13 times, which made 39 lashes on the person's back. You know that Jesus Christ, he suffered this treatment by the Jews likewise. But now Paul, when they were making him ready to be scourged, he speaks up and he says to the centurion standing alongside of him, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man, a Roman, and not uncondemned?" And oh, the centurion, he got frightened. He ran to the captain, and he told the captain that this man was a Roman. You see here, my hearers, how good that the Roman laws were. You know, most of our laws come forth from the Romans. The Romans didn't believe in condemning a person without listening to both sides of the story. They both were justified in having a fair trial. And a person that was a Roman, he was not allowed to be treated in any mean and horrible way. And therefore, when he said he was a Roman, immediately they left off trying to scourge him. You know, when he was in jail in Philippi, then likewise he had said that he was a Roman, and he demanded that those that had put him in prison come to the prison and unloosen him, which they did. Now, being a citizen of this empire, the Roman Empire, helped Paul quite often. But he was a citizen likewise of a country, my hearers, over which Jesus Christ is king. He was a citizen of a better city and of a better country than the Roman Empire. And he had a much better protector than even the Romans themselves, for God was his protector. And now when they heard this, the captain, he called these Jews together, and he demanded that they be there the next day, and he would present Paul before them, and they could bring forth their accusations against him. And the next day we find that these people came there, and Paul was presented before them again. And again, he stands up and he begins just as in the beginning of this chapter. Men and brethren, he says, I have lived before God with a good conscience until this day. I wonder how many of my hearers could say something like that. It was Paul's aim to keep a clear conscience. Conscience, my hearers, is something whereby you and I judge according to whether it is good or whether it is evil. We judge the actions of others and also of ourselves. Conscience is God's king in a man. You know, you may try to overthrow the king, but you can't. You may put up a war against the king, but you'll never prevail against him. He will always strive to get the mastery again. And now, I don't think any one of my hearers can say what Paul said, that I have lived before God with a good conscience unto this day. I wouldn't be able to say it. How often haven't you had it that conscience dictated to you that it was wrong, that it was evil, that it was sinful to do this, and you went over the top of your conscience? Don't tell me you didn't, because I know you did. If you didn't, then you can say with Paul, you have lived before God with a good conscience. Now, it isn't always that your conscience warns you before you're going to do a sinful act. Sometimes you're tempted, sometimes you're tripped up, and then conscience begins to blast at you after you have done it. And oh, my hearers, all you find then is what? Sorrow and remorse that you have done something like that. Oh, to have a clear and a good conscience before God and before man is something, my hearers, that each and every one of us should strive to have in this life. Or to have this, that you know, and your conscience witnesses with it, that you are clear in this matter. We often say that. I know. My conscience tells me that I haven't done anything wrong in this particular matter. Oh, what a blessing, my hearers. If you may live close to your conscience, that's God's voice, that's God's king in you. And Paul, he lived very close to his conscience. He tried to keep a conscience void of offense. I was going to say in our next lesson, we have a very good lesson concerning a man that did not live according to his conscience, and Paul who did. But our time is going, my hearers. And next week, I hope to speak about the lesson that is on our program concerning Gethsemane. I wish to step away for a while from these lessons about Paul and how he was taken prisoner and taken to Rome. Now this man then, Paul, he lived before God with a good conscience. And now there was a high priest standing there, a man by the name of Ananias. And he commanded somebody to smite him on the mouth. What an awful thing for a high priest to command somebody to smite him on the mouth. Who was this high priest? Why, he wasn't even a high priest according to history and according to the commentary. He had been high priest and he had been removed from his office and he had been taken to Rome prisoner. And in the meanwhile, a man by the name of Jonathan had become high priest. And this Felix, he had Jonathan murdered. And in that interval, there was no high priest. But it appears that this Ananias had come back and he had taken the throne. He had become the president of the Sanhedrin without any authority, without anybody putting him on the place. And now he was the person that commanded Paul to be smitten in the mouth because he had said he had walked before God with a good conscience. And what did Paul say? You can imagine that Paul became angry. And he spake unto him a prophetic judgment. He said unto him, thou whited wall, commandest thou that I should be smitten contrary to the law, where he, the high priest, was to obey the law and teach others the law. God shall smite thee, thou whited wall, he says. What was Paul doing here? Remember, he was under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. It wasn't because he was angry that he said this. No. God gave him to see what would take place with this Ananias. Oh, God is strict sometimes in punishing sinners who punish his people. To make it short, almost 5 minutes after 3, this man Ananias, what happened to him? This prophetic judgment came upon him, for when the Jewish war broke out, assassins came and set fire to his house, and he had to flee. He had to hide himself. And he hid himself in an aqueduct, a place where the water went through. But these assassins, they found him in this aqueduct, and they slew him. He was killed. The prophetic judgment was fulfilled. God shall smite thee, thou whited wall. I can't go on any longer, my hearers, because I'll run into difficulty with the other teachers, which I don't like to do. I would like to continue with this. I think there's a lot of interesting things in this of Paul being taken prisoner and carried to Rome. But next week, as I said, we will take the lesson that is on our program, Gethsemane. That's all for today.